Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Ashish. So Ashish, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Sure, thanks, Dan. Firstly, thank you for having me here. So I'm based in New Delhi in India, and for a living, I have a really cool job. I think I get to work with mobile game developers all over the world. I'm currently the co-founder and CBO at a company called App Broda. The name is a combination of apps and Yoda. It's quite an interesting etymology. And we are a software business that services tons of mobile games all across Europe, Southeast Asia, and the USA, right?
Awesome. So how did you get the idea to start this business?
So really interesting. Dial back a few years to my Google days. I was in Google, and you know, Google's all about ads. In my role at Google, I got to work with a lot of publishers, but also a lot of third-party and SaaS companies in the space that were servicing publishers. And I came across Sid, who actually started App Broda. So he's the other co-founder. In 2021, he left his company and started App Broda. And he and I always felt like, you know, there could be a better way to help game publishers make more money. And I really felt very excited about that mission. So in 2022, I took the leap of faith from a corporate job and joined the startup world.
Awesome. So can you just tell us like more about what you do? So if I'm going to go and develop a mobile game, how would I use you? Like, what does the use case look like?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, just to step back on the industry, like most of the games that people play are actually the way that they earn money is through ads, right? Most people would probably be like, really? Is that how they earn money? But like, if you're playing a casual game like a Candy Crush or, you know, like a Subway Surfer, you're probably watching a ton of ads and, you know, sometimes clicking on those, and then that's how they earn money, right? And this is in the billions of dollars. This industry is really large. So if you're a mobile game developer and you build one of these cool games and, you know, you said, okay, how do I earn money? I've got users. Now what do I do to earn more money? That's where we come in. We come in and say, hey guys, don't worry, we've got you covered. We'll be your friendliest ad ops person. This industry is called the ad ops or the ad operations industry. So you just focus on, you know, making cool content, making your next game, improving your current game. We'll take care of the monetization, right? So we kind of outsource your monetization efforts and say, you just focus on building like cool games and our software will do the rest.
So, okay. I mean, so like what exactly, so if I'm like build a game and outsource monetization efforts. So for somebody who doesn't know, like what does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll just go a bit deeper. So everyone is using something called an ad network. So if you're a game developer, it's not that you have your own team going to a Coke or a Cadbury and saying, hey guys, look, I have 10,000 users, show your ad on my game. That's too difficult for you. It's too cumbersome to get those meetings. So ad networks like Google AdMob, for example, makes your life a lot easier. They say, okay guys, you built a really cool game. I will go to Cadbury, I'll go to Coke, I'll go to all these other advertisers who want to show their ads on your your game and your inventory. And I'll take up fees for that, right, as the middleman. So Google's done that, you know, a couple of other big networks have done that. They've been around for 10 to 12 years. It's a massive platform. What we do is we've built software on top of that platform, right? So we come in as what's called an optimization engine. We say, Dan, you know what? Google's doing a great job for you. They're making $100 a day for you, but I think we can help you make $120. Just put in our software on top of Google, and you know that the optimization engine will understand your data. It'll use some ML. It'll show out some recommendations. You'll accept them, reject them. You'll have a 30-minute job to accept or reject. And if you say yes and those work, you probably get a 20% jump in. So that's how, you know, we ease out your workload. We don't disrupt what Google's doing because, you know, they're obviously the big daddies in this space. And we just kind of build on top of them.
Makes sense. So what does the pricing structure look like for your software?
Yeah, you know, this industry is really interesting. Almost all the third-party software in this industry, including the ad networks like Google, etc., they all charge a cut of the revenue that they may help you make, right? And so typically we price ourselves at what we can drive incrementally for you. We take 30% of that. So if I'm adding $20 to your game, I would take $6 as my fees. If I add nothing to you, I make $0.
That's awesome. Yeah, I feel like that's a very attractive offer for any of your customers, because at the end of the day, it's like 30% of zero is still zero, right? So,
yeah.
I mean,
so we have this sales tagline inside our company that it's really hard to say no to a free trial of our product. Like, we almost make it like, okay, you don't really have a reason to say no. So when we're talking to a customer, like, hang on, like, is this a problem? No. Is this a problem? No. Is pricing a problem? You know, no. So that's kind of how we try to build the sales culture.
Well, like, how do you qualify someone? I'm sure that you probably will, like, turn people down because it's not worth your time if you can't help them.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we use something called a mobile data intelligence tool. There are a bunch of them out there. We use something called data.ai, which was earlier known as App Annie. They have tons of data from the Play Store and the App Store on, you know, what apps are doing well, what games are doing well, you know, what ad networks people are using. So when we go into a conversation, we're already qualified in knowing that, hey, Dan, you're using AdMob, you're using Meta. We know these are the two networks you're using. You've probably got like 10,000 downloads in the last week. Most of your users are from the United States or from Germany. And then we tailor our pitch quite well because we already know a lot of information about your game. We've already played it. So we know where, you know, the optimizations are possible. So we're heading into that meeting with a lot of knowledge. And like you said, we obviously qualify with a certain revenue threshold.
For sure. So what would you say is the biggest challenge that you face in your business today?
I think our biggest challenge in our business today, and it's also our biggest opportunity, is that inherently we're dependent on the platforms, right? Because we're a middleware or we're an optimization engine, right? And I think we're seeing more of these businesses which are building on top of, like, you know, like an Amazon or Apple's or Google's, right? Because these guys have become really massive. I mean, I kind of think of them as like the governments of the private tech world. Right, like if you ever want to do a traditional business, you first read the guidelines of the government, right? Like which country you're in, you know, what's their tax policy, what's their legal policy. In a way, like I feel the Googles and Apples have become like that in the democratized tech world. So that's our biggest challenge, because just like governments can change policies which can favor you or, you know, cause you harm, that can happen to us as well, right? So when something goes our way, it really goes our way. Like we see massive growth. But when something doesn't go our way, then, you know, it's a big risk to our business, right? So it's a high risk, high reward kind of quadrant that we're playing in, because we're not completely independent of these changes that we don't control. So I think that's the biggest thing that keeps me up at night. Is Google going to change something that's, you know, maybe going to make it bad for us?
For sure. So in terms of getting in front of people, like, what has been your best strategy today to get your customers to find out that you exist in the first place?
Very interesting question. So we were a COVID-born startup, so we had to do everything remote. Also, we're based in India mostly, and most of our customers are in China, United States, and the European region, right? So we couldn't go meet them. In the COVID world, it was cold calling, cold LinkedIn, cold emailing, you know, just the old grunt stuff that did really well. Of course, like, we have an awesome BD team that sharpened that out. But I think I would say, if I had to choose, meeting people face to face at game conferences, and there are quite a few of them that happen globally, has proven to be the best way of not just putting us in front of people, but also understanding the customer a lot better, right? We're still a 2-year-old company. So for us, we're still constantly learning about the challenges that our customer faces. There's nothing like doing that over beer or coffee still in 2023.
For sure. So do you even go back and interview like your current customers, like, to better figure out your ICP?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's something. And I think, like, this has been a bit of a challenge in our, or at least in my head as an Indian co-founder, right? Like, Indian companies are historically have not been perceived as like high credibility companies when you're selling abroad, especially in the Western markets. So we were always skeptical, will people take us seriously, or will we have to, you know, it's a really tough mountain to climb. But I think, like, now we're at a stage where we build really good rapport with our customers, and we know our ICP really well. And we're constantly setting up meetings and asking them, you know, wild questions like, hey, we have this new idea. Do you think it'll work, or do you think it's a really bad idea? Right. And I think they also like it, because it kind of, you know, they also want to experiment beyond just their day to day job. So I think it's become like a fun cycle. And I would encourage everyone, like, if you're in the B2B business, I was a bit afraid of asking these questions because we have really large customers. And I was like, man, are they going to think I'm a bit stupid or naive? Like, why am I asking this question? But I found out that if asked correctly, like, in terms of advice, they're very happy to share more advice and more problems. And they're like, oh, can you solve this? Or, like, you know, they're very, very friendly. And that was a really good learning experience for me.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think where you're located in 2023 is, like, it doesn't matter, right? It's about if you can produce results. And if you have these case studies and you have the ability to, you know, help out people in the gaming sector, I don't think it really matters where you're located. When you go to these conferences, like, obviously it can be difficult in the same token because there's so many people. So are you speaking there? Like, how do you get in front of all these people at these conferences?
Yeah, it's a great question. When we attended our first conference in Barcelona, we had no idea what to do. We just turned up and we were like, we don't have a booth. We don't have a speaker slot. We don't know anyone except the person we paid the ticket to get our sponsorship done. And we're like, what are we going to do? And I think you just got to, at that moment, you just got to see what others are doing. Because, you know, some of the folks have been around the block. So, you know what they're doing. And we picked up a few of the stuff that some of the seasoned guys were doing and, you know, doing really well. So, like, a couple of things that I picked up. They'd already preset meetings before coming to the conference. They weren't attending any of the conference content sessions. They were doing all the meetings outside in the hotel lobby and stuff, right? In all these coffee breaks and all of that. They didn't attend a single, like, meetup or whatever, right? So, that was really interesting. And then, of course, you know, nowadays you have these networking apps that event organizers do for you, which are also really helpful in setting up meetings. But that I think the single biggest takeaway is before you hit the conference 2 weeks before, start finding out who's coming, put it out on your LinkedIn, send cold emails, say you want to meet up, say you want to buy lunch, right? So, you know, those strategies have proven really effective. So we end up buying lunch for a lot of our potential clients that we want to meet, right? And they're always open for that because, you know, they have to have lunch somewhere. And if someone's buying them a nice meal, why not? So that's proven successful. But like you also said, eventually over time, what we realize is that we've got to be consistent. We can't just hit one conference and be like, oh, what's the ROI from that? People have got to see us at six places and say, okay, I've seen Ashish or Abroda 5 times now in Europe, right? And I know they're an Indian company. So they're going to be doing something interesting. Like, I'm intrigued. Like, why is an Indian company coming to Europe 5 times? How do they have the money? They've got a speaker slot. You know, they're saying interesting stuff. They're buying people lunch. And I think once they've seen you 5-6 times, then they're kind of intrigued to meet you the 7th time, right? So I don't think the first or second event is going to be an ROI positive event. So don't go in thinking, oh, I'm going to, you know, be able to convert like 10 clients. Just be consistent with the events that you attend.
For sure. So obviously 2024 is around the corner. So what would you say, like, are your goals for next year in terms of revenue, for example, like approximate monthly revenue now, like where you want to get to for next year?
Yeah, so without sharing the exact stuff, because we're, you know, that's a bit sensitive, but we're in our, like, in a SaaS, typically you're either in 0 to 1 or 1 to 10 million ARR. We are in our 1 to 10 million, like quite into the 1 to 10 million journey. So for us, the goal is getting closer to like an 8 or 9 million ARR figure in the next year. And, you know, just maintaining a very high retention base. We have some good logos and clients that are working with us. It's been almost 3 or 4 quarters that they've been with us. And if we can keep them for another 3 or 4 quarters, you know, then we're in the sort of, like, we've crossed the survival zone, right? In the SaaS space, once you've created like 6 quarters of retention and you're about 5 million plus, it's statistically proven that you're kind of above a survival zone, right? So that's our aim. And we're bootstrapped. We don't have external funding. We also want to maintain our high EBITDA. We have a very high EBITDA rate. So as a CBO, for me personally, those are the two highest goals, like get to 8 to 9 mil and keep our high EBITDA going and maintain my logo retention.
For sure. So, like, what do you think is the biggest obstacle between now and, like, reaching that goal of 8-9 million ARR?
You know, I think it's going to be in the right bet, right? We're a very small team with less than 30 folks. And all of us right now are trying to figure out what's the right bet for 24, 25, 26, maybe the next 2.5 years, right? And I think because in our industry, we have potentially 15 to 20 bets we could take apart from what we're already doing, right? So apart from what we're already doing to, like, you know, increase our revenue by that kind of number, we have to have a new strong bet. And what we've seen is that in a small company, you cannot take more than like 1 or 2 bets in a year, right? Because your product team is going to work on it, your tech team is going to work on it, then you'll have QA issues and, you know, all of that. But I think for us as an org, just taking the right bet is so important right now.
So when you say take the right bet, do you mean like adding like the right features? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. So we're in an interesting phase where we've got one feature that's working well and we've got clients attached to that and, you know, business is running, but we have a really good potential to upsell to the same clients, right? And so that next feature, like you said, which will also be a good product market fit, get us the right margins, that's what we're kind of, you know, really, that's where our effort is going right now.
So that's sort of what you were talking about earlier when you have these discussions and saying, hey, like, we're thinking about adding this, would it be relevant, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You're bang on, right? And because we built that pool of clients, we can just do it now over a phone call or a Slack saying, hey guys, we're shipping this out. Do you think this would be useful to your team? And it's amazing, right? Because now we don't have to wait 3 months for a feedback loop. Now it's coming in like a week, right? So I think we're on a good base. We just have to like jump the right direction.
No, for sure. And that's exciting. So what would you say is like the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this company?
Oh, yeah. I would say it's a piece of advice I would give myself to a startup I started when I was a little bit younger, right? Because I think with this company, I've kind of learned that and I'm trying to implement it the best I can. I think there's this really cool quote from Denzel Washington. I don't know if it's his or like, but he said it a lot. He says that without commitment, you'll never start. But more importantly, without consistency, you'll never finish, right? And in my first startup, I started, but I also stopped within 18-month period. It was pretty short, right? And I didn't give myself enough time to be in the industry that I was in. I just had an idea and I just kind of said, oh, it's not working, and I left, right? This time, I know that I'm committing to an industry and I want to spend like at least 4 to 5 years, right? And that's the consistency part. Like maybe the next idea I have won't work, but that doesn't mean this industry is not worth staying the long run for, right? And you know what's really interesting, I would also say what I've learned in the last couple of years and advice to myself and this company or younger self is that business cycles are becoming really short nowadays, right? So we've seen people in our space, in the SaaS space, earn a couple of $1 million in a single quarter. So it's not like, you know, to make 10 million, you now have to grind it out for 5 years. It's not the case anymore, right? We're in $1 trillion economies, there are $1 trillion companies, right? So if you can just find the right niche, you could make $10 million in a quarter, right? So if you can just stay long enough, for me, that's the biggest learning that I wake up and I listen to that quote every day and I'm okay, just like beat it out, stay long enough.
No, exactly. And on top of that, what you're doing is smarter because you're talking to your customers, you're having these conversations. And I think that oftentimes people try to build something and then see if there's like a need for it, but you're kind of making sure that they need it before you build it. So if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you see things going for your business?
Yeah. So I think we'll definitely be sitting in a couple of offices more than India. I do think like we'll have offices in East Asia, especially in China, because that's a big market for us. I think we'll hit our goal of revenue that I mentioned while maintaining our EBITDA. I don't think our team size will increase. I'm a big fan of having a high revenue per employee, something that Nathan from FounderPath talks about a lot. And I love that concept, high revenue per employee. So that's something that we're really focused on. So I think we're going to be hitting those three KPIs that I mentioned earlier. And on top of that, I think we'll be in a couple of different geographies physically. And I hope we'll be a lot less stressed because we'll have crossed the survival zone of a SaaS company.
But are you going to hire people, like local people in those markets, or are you just going to have people from your team be based in China, for example?
So one thing that's quite clear to me right now is that in East Asian markets, it is imperative to have someone who speaks the language and understands the culture. So for us, Korea, Japan, China, those markets, big gaming markets. And it is almost impossible the way that we've tried to have an English speaking person, not also from the local culture, try and penetrate those markets from a GTM perspective, right? So at least for us, that hasn't worked out. So we definitely want to hire local.
Yeah, that's smart. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out, do you mind sharing your website or social media, the best way to get in contact with you?
If anyone is looking to enter the world of mobile gaming or is from the world of mobile gaming and kind of likes what we do, check us out on appbroda.com. That's appbroda.com. And you can email me directly at ashish@appbroda.com. And if you're from China, Korea, Japan, we would love to have a conversation.
Awesome. Ashish, thank you so much for your time and we're rooting for you.
Dan, thank you so much. Lovely talking to you. Have a great one.
Thanks, you too. All right, bye.
Bye.